Roque B. Delman.
Good morning. I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal.
Very well.
May it please the court, I'm Reedy Mukopade from the Sexual Violence Legal Services, representing appellant Megan Roque. We're asking the court to reverse and remand based on the lower court erring both procedurally and substantively. In this case, Megan was not afforded proper protections and an opportunity to be heard despite meeting the statutory requirements under RCW 790, the Sexual Assault Protection Order statute, the SAPO statute. Legislative declaration at 790.005 clearly states that sexual assault is the most heinous crime short of murder, that it's humiliating, degrading.
You dispute that she, in her petition, failed to satisfy everything that the statute requires?
She met the statutory requirements related to what is required in the petition. 020 specific.
Did she assert in her petition specific acts or statements giving rise to reasonable fear of future acts of dangerousness from the respondent?
She did, Your Honor.
In what way?
She provided very clear, detailed statements under the penalty of perjury of a sexual assault that included forced unclothing, forced penetration, that left her feeling choked, that left her bleeding and in pain.
Those were the acts complained of, though. I mean, those were the part of the statute requires an assertion that there's some non-sexual, non-consensual sexual contact. What about the part of the statute that requires that specific acts or statements be asserted that give rise to a fear? And I take it your position is that because the incident occurred or is alleged to have occurred, that's sufficient to meet that.
That is sufficient. She also additionally included information about the fact that she did not know the respondent and did not know what he was capable of. And the legislative declaration specifically says that a sexual assault is inherently violent, that it causes fear, it causes terror. But
you're asking me to you're asking us to interpret this statute. Is that correct?
Correct, Your Honor. But the legislative
Do you believe that the statute is ambiguous?
The statute does provide clear direction in what is required step by step, from the petition to the ex parte order to the final.
So, if it's not ambiguous, why would we interpret the statute? Why don't we just determine its plain meaning and go from there?
Well, if the court should find it ambiguous, there isn't much case law. There is no guidance on the Sexual Assault Protection Order statute.
Should we find the petition requirement statute ambiguous when we lay it next to the elements required to get the final order, since the final order doesn't require a finding of future fear?
The reason why it's not ambiguous is that at the petition...
You may actually be hurting yourself arguing that it's not ambiguous. You might
The reasonable fear finding under 020 is specifically required only for the petition, not for the final finding as defined under 090.
That's why I'm asking you why that doesn't make it ambiguous and allow us to interpret future fear to flow from the finding of the misconduct.
There is some ambiguity around what reasonable fear is. However, the legislative intent does provide some guidance how reasonable fear can be interpreted through the fact that it finds sexual assault, it inflicts terror, it inflicts fear in somebody who has experienced sexual assault. The reasonable fear finding related to, there is some ambiguity. However, our position is that the reasonable fear requirement is solely for filing the petition, solely for getting the ex parte order without notice, which is essentially seeking a preliminary injunctive relief without notice to the other party, which is why this
requirement. What if this motion had occurred earlier in the proceedings. You file your petition. For some reason, the respondent gets wind of it. It's right there, walks into the ex parte hearing where you're trying to get in temporary injunctive relief and says, Your Honor, you've got to dismiss this case. This petition doesn't satisfy the requirements of the statute. There's nothing for this court to do because the court only act when a petition satisfying the requirements of the statute has been filed.
Even if a respondent were to object to the initial finding for an ex parte order, if a court did find the ex parte order should not be issued, it does not prevent for the hearing to proceed to a full merits order.
Why would the court not dismiss at that point if it found that the petition was missing one of the required elements?
The court shouldn't dismiss at that order at that point because the requirement for a final sexual assault protection order is solely showing that non-consensual sexual conduct occurred. And
doesn't 050 says that upon receipt of a petition, the court shall set for a hearing within 14 days. Now, but that must mean on receipt of a petition, as we've described it in 020, which sets forth what needs to be in a petition. Am I right?
Well, in 110, for example.
How about 020? I mean, that's where it sets forth what you need to put in a petition.
It says what you need to put in a petition. It does not say that requirement is needed to move forward to
So when it says upon filing a petition, your position is that upon filing a petition doesn't mean a petition as we've described it in the statute. It means just a piece of paper.
No, it does mean the petition under the statute, but
what if it didn't allege any sexual assault? It alleged, I'm afraid that this person's going to do it in the future, but didn't make any allegations of past misconduct.
So a petition, so 110 specifically talks about the ex parte order and the temporary order, and it says that a non-consensual sexual conduct must be found for a temporary order and that there must be good cause to enter the ex parte order. But if the court does not enter the ex parte order, it should make findings. It does not say that the petition is immediately invalidated and cannot be set for a hearing on the merits.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors. Catherine Smith representing the respondent in this case. 020 is very clear. It requires not only an allegation of unwanted sexual conduct, but specific statements or actions at the time of the sexual assault or subsequently thereafter, a little redundant, reasonable fear of future dangerous acts as a result of the respondent's statements or acts. Now,
0901A is also pretty clear, isn't it?
090 says you can get a final order on proof by a preponderance of the evidence of the sexual misconduct, and if you meet the requirements, of 110, which requires good cause. Now,
or 120,
which does not address this, except to the extent that it refers back to 110. It still requires good cause, and it defies sense to think that you can have a petition that does not comply with 020 and that you can get a permanent order based on what is being argued here.
The good cause in 110 has to do with getting a temporary order, and we're not talking about temporary orders here.
We aren't talking about temporary orders, but the statute doesn't say that you have to just meet 110.1A. It says you have to meet 110. And 110 has two components to one, has two components to it. First, you have to show the sexual misconduct, and then you have to show good cause. Now, in order to harmonize,
the condition is that even when you're at the point of trying to get a permanent order, you apply the term set in the statute for getting a temporary order.
That's
correct.
So you
have to meet both the temporary order and permanent order in order to get a permanent order.
In order to get a permanent order. But there's a separate problem here, and it was identified in some of the earlier questioning. You shouldn't even be able to get to the point where you can get a hearing if your petition does not meet the criteria for 020, which was the reason that Doug North, Judge North was correct in dismissing this petition, because the petition did not meet the criteria of 020.
So did the trial court dismiss it on a procedural basis as opposed to reaching the merits?
I believe that the court did two things. It recognized that the petition was insufficient, and this is like basically just a 12B6 analysis. He also made a...
It went beyond a 12B6, or I think it was described as a 12C motion below, but it's a motion for judgment on the pleadings, but here, that's not what occurred.
Well,
there was a lot of things in front of the judge at the time this motion was granted that didn't have anything that was well beyond the pleading.
And the trial court, I may think, in addition to recognizing that the petition did not meet the criteria of 020, which is a procedural grounds, the trial court also made a factual determination that there was no evidence and there was no allegation. Well, there was no allegation, and consequently there was no evidence of reasonable fear or of any fear at all based on the conduct of the respondent, which we know from the legislative history and from the fact that the 020 was amended before it was enacted, that the legislature intended for the respondent's acts to be something that required protection.
So let me take you through a little bit different scenario. Let's assume that instead of a 12C motion, that this thing had proceeded to hearing and that the petitioner on cross-examination had testified that she had no future fear of the respondent, and the petition had alleged future fear. And then there's a halftime motion, and the trial court dismisses.
Yes.
I understand your reading of the statute. We would affirm that because there's a lack of proof on a necessary element, future fear.
Future fear, that's correct. And I want to make clear, I don't think you have to get there in order to affirm this dismissal.
I understand how you understand
it. I understand the statute to, in order to get a permanent order and in order to harmonize the requirements of the petition, you must have a petition that says this. And the good cause determination in 110B, the good cause that you're going to be able to eliminate this harm, if you just take out the temporary parts of 110, what you're left is with is an assessment that you must have good cause for the order. It requires sexual misconduct and good cause to prevent the harm. Now, if you, in order to harmonize the statute,
harm that's caused by lack of service. And that's what the statute says.
Well, if
that's very different from the harm that is described in the petition itself. So two different things.
If you you can read 110B. Well, the statute says that you have to meet the criteria of 110 or 120. And 110 requires both sexual misconduct and good cause.
So if in a fictional world you were entitled to a jury trial, the jury would be instructed it had to find past sexual misconduct and future fear.
Correct. Just like for any other sort of protection order. This is not, it's not a shaming order. It's not a therapy order. It's intended to prevent future harm. That's the reason it has a limitation. And what you are being asked to do here today is to enact the statute that the legislature didn't enact, because the legislature requires in the petition that you at least allege future fear based on the respondent's act and conduct. Let's say you don't have to prove that, and I'm not conceding that. You have to at least allege it in order to be entitled to an order. And with regard to the findings that Judge North made, he made a finding not only that there wasn't proof of fear or of any conduct on the part of the respondent that would have justified an order, but that there had been no allegation, and that there was still no allegation at the time of this hearing, after there had been plenty of time to try to backfill if that was what they were going to do. So what you're being
ordered was that she had failed to establish that she had a reasonable fear of future dangerous acts by the respondent. how can the court have determined that she had failed to establish that before he completed, allowed the hearing to be completed?
Well, the petitioner had testified at the previous.
She was in the middle of her testimony, if I recall.
She had testified. She made no offer of proof when no additional evidence was asked for. And it was, in fact, conceded that she had had literally no contact with the respondent.
Let me ask you another question. Let's assume that we have the same petition we have here, but there was testimony at the hearing of future fear. Would the pleadings then be deemed amended to conform to the evidence at the hearing?
It would be our position that they should not have been. And that
would the court have discretion to find that to be the case?
Possibly, but would also have discretion to not do so. But that's not what happened here.
Not in your case, but again, trying to figure out how this is all going to work after we've written an opinion in this case.
And I'm proposing to you that the way that you can do this and have 020 have any meaning at all is to recognize that the requirements for a permanent order require good cause in addition to proof by a preponderance of the evidence of sexual misconduct. And the way you do that is by incorporating 110B, because 110 requires both sexual misconduct and harm that will be prevented by entry of the order. Now, in order to do that, you have to acknowledge, you have to recognize that the ex parte analysis of that is not relevant to a permanent order. But you also, but that is the only way that the requirements of the petition can be harmonized and can be, in fact, implemented. Because it makes no sense that the legislature required, for this incredibly profound order, required that the petition allege a reasonable fear, but that that not be the reason for ongoing protection. That was what the legislature intended. It is quite clear from the legislative history, as we've set out in the amici response, and it can be accomplished by including in the requirements of an order that reasonable fear as a result of the respondent's conduct be not only alleged but proven. Unless the court has further questions.
Thank you.
The legislative history, the reasonable fear was not a requirement in the original statute and was actually introduced later in respect to the ex parte order, aligning it with other protection orders. And the legislative intent is very clear. The civil SAPO is not to prevent future dangerous acts. It's to prevent interactions with the final protection order. It's to prevent interactions with the offender.
So would you have to present some evidence that there was some risk you were going to have an interaction with the alleged offender?
More than the focus of knowing interactions with the alleged offender, the fact that it can cause fear and it is innately a terrorizing act is what is the basis for preventing the.
My understanding was that, and correct me if I've misunderstood this, the circumstance of having been a victim by itself creates a fear that is ongoing.
Correct.
And that person carries forward, and that's all that's needed to justify the entry of the order.
Yes, correct, the final order. And the court is also correct in identifying that this was treated as a convoluted 12C motion. The appellant, Ms. Roque, was not allowed to complete her testimony. No additional evidence was provided, yet the court went outside the statutory requirement and implemented additional statutory or elements for a finding related to passage of time, related to reasonable fear to the for the final order. Regarding the requirements under 110, the temporary order is based on good cause, and if good cause is not established, the court must provide a reason for the denial. And 120 is solely about duration. These are not substantive requirements. These are solely procedural requirements. And lastly, 020.
So let me ask on that point. So in your reading of 090, then, is that the requirements of 110 and 120 are not necessary to the issuance of the SAFA?
The 110 and 120 are not the final burden that a petitioner needs to prove related to the issuance of a SAPO. And 020, under respondent's version, would leave 090 without any meaning, would render 090 completely meaningless, and would make this unattainable burden for a protection order proceeding that is largely experienced by pro se litigants. Thank you.
Thank you.